1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's your turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Thank you very much. We've got an hour left of this version, Your Turn, the program I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. If you want to call in and join in the conversation, you can do so by calling 623-1330. You can also sign on to the website, my organization's website at www.cfif.org. to listen to any of the interviews that you happen to miss, or if you want to listen to one another time, as you may like to do with my next guest. We're joined this afternoon by Jan Crawford Greenberg. I know if you saw her face and you can pull it up on the internet, you'd recognize her because she is a correspondent for ABC News. She covers law and politics for World News Tonight, Nightline, Good Morning America, and This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And she has a brand new book. It came out earlier, I think in January sometime, maybe just a little bit after that. It's called Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for Control of the United States Supreme Court. Joining us, Supreme Court correspondent and best-selling author Jan Crawford Greenberg. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here and talking to you.
Well, it's an exciting time in Washington, D.C. with the U.S. Supreme Court. We certainly had some excitement. Was it just last week that the EPA decision came out?
That's right. And that Supreme Court said that, basically it rejected the Bush administration's arguments that the EPA did not have to regulate greenhouse gases out of new cars and trucks, and it sent it back to the EPA. And the liberals carried the day in that case, joined by Justice Anthony Kennedy, and we saw the four more solid conservatives in dissent.
An interesting day, and something that I think maybe slightly less predicted by some, but certainly not by you, in your book, Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for Control of the United States Supreme Court. If I'm remembering right, when now Chief Justice John Roberts took the court, one of the things that he was really going to work toward was having a unified court. An impossibility, isn't it? I mean, you've been following this court for many, many years as a correspondent. Is it even a possibility with the current court or even in the near future, perhaps?
Well, I think it's a very noble goal. But I interviewed Justice Scalia about this very question. And, I said, what do you think about this idea that, the Chief Justice has? And he kind of paused and he said, lots of luck. I mean, these are issues that are so divisive and so controversial. Clearly, they split these justices just like they do the rest of society, all of us. So, I think it's a very good idea to try to find common ground and bring people together and build consensus. And I think he can do that in some cases. But in those big picture cases, the ones that are on the front pages that lead the nation's broadcasts, I think it's going to be very difficult. I think we're going to see a lot of 5-4 cases for the next few years to come.
With now our swing vote no longer on the court, that puts Kennedy as the swing vote, right?
That's exactly right. For so many years, we looked at Justice O'Connor. In fact, a lot of people said it wasn't the Rehnquist Court named after Chief Justice William Rehnquist. It was the O'Connor Court because, as O'Connor went, so went that Supreme Court. And on so many of those social cases, whether it was abortion or affirmative action or religion or presidential power, she would vote with liberals. And so now with Justice Alito, a more conservative justice, taking her place, the court is poised to turn to the right. But you're right, there's that one vote of Justice Kennedy, and he could be the new swing vote to really kind of pull the court back from moving even further to the right.
Now, in the very beginning of your book, the book's called The Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for Control of the United States Supreme Court. In the very first chapter, you describe the final day of the June term when everyone was expecting that then Chief Justice William Rehnquist would announce his retirement, and it didn't happen. Typically, would it have happened at the end of a justice's current term? And if that's the case, June is quickly approaching. Do you have any predictions for us?
Well, I don't think that President Bush is going to get another retirement this year. I mean, of course, everyone will be watching at the end of the term. Justice Stevens is going to be 87 years old this month, and some people have, been saying, is he going to step down? What about Justice Ginsburg? She had cancer and has recovered from that. But it does not look to me like anyone's going to step down. Justice Stevens is really engaged in the court's work. You know, he's the one that wrote that decision in the EPA case. I mean, he's very engaged in struggling for Justice Kennedy's vote. And so I think that, you know, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, and Justice Alito may be President Bush's two Supreme Court nominations. But, you know, you've got to realize, I mean, he, with these two nominations, President Bush really did change the direction of the court for quite some time. And history may judge President Bush harshly on a number of levels, but no one will be able to write that he did not change the direction of the court. I mean, that will be his lasting legacy.
Well, and I think that you know, what we saw in the days of Harriet Myers, and you write about that in this book as well, and even before Harriet Myers, let me back up, but some of the other federal appointments and a lot of the debate that went on, and you know, certainly Gonzalez and a lot of other folks who, you know, never, ever, ever got Senate confirmation, never even, you know, made it even onto the Senate floor, was certainly setting us up for, as you mentioned, this monumental time, at least in the Bush legacy.
No, that's right. And people have even actually been writing recently that one thing that President Bush also did was by nominating some of these top-flight, first-rate conservative thinkers to some of the appeals courts, that he's actually raised the bar for all those Republicans who are going to be running for president. Because now you're starting to see people ask Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani, you know, what kind of judges are you going to appoint if you're president? Because that is the one area where people really believe, conservatives really believe, that George Bush got it right.
Now, you are a graduate of the University of Chicago Law School, and you have your undergraduate degree from the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. I know we've got a lot of fans here in the audience.
Roll Tide. I grew up in Alabama. I'm a huge fan of the Tide.
Okay. So, would you ever have imagined that you were doing what you're doing, and you now have this book out, Supreme Conflict?
Yes. It's kind of funny how life is, isn't it? You know, you're never quite sure what's around the next corner. But it's great. I've been in Washington since 94, covering the court. And it's just so fascinating, you know, to be able to see kind of how things unfold here. And for the book, I was really lucky to be able to interview 9 of the justices, and then also to interview people in the White House and the Justice Department, kind of getting behind the scenes for what President Bush was thinking when he was nominating Roberts and Myers, of course, and Justice Alito. I just feel really fortunate. But I love to get back to Alabama. That's where my family is. So I'm very excited about our new coach, and I'm hoping to get down for some games. We're going to give Florida a run for the money again.
Now, isn't it also correct that you had the first interview with Justice Roberts, Chief Justice
That's
Roberts?
That's right, and he sat down with me, and we broadcast it on Nightline late at the end of last year, and that was also just a real privilege. He's a fascinating man. He's going to be somebody just fascinating to watch lead the court. He's a young guy. I mean, he's in his early 50s, so he's going to be up there directing that court for, you know, another generation. And then I was also fortunate to sit down with Justice Stevens, an older guy. Like I said, he'll be 87 in April this month, the 20th. But after President Ford died, remember, President Ford had nominated John Paul Stevens to the Supreme Court. So that was obviously a pretty fascinating experience, getting his thoughts on President Ford. You know, I mean, you got to also think about it. It's kind of funny because here are all these justices, like Justice Stevens, who's pretty liberal, Justice Souter, another liberal, they were nominated by Republican presidents. 7 of the justices on the Rehnquist court were nominated by Republicans, yet that was a court that was a huge disappointment for conservatives in many ways. And so that was part of the book. I was trying to figure out what happened to that court and why did it become such a disappointment. And then I conclude that George Bush did succeed. I mean, he got 2 solid judicial conservatives and Roberts and Alito, and they are not going to change. They are not going to drift to the left like some of those other justices have done.
So the Supreme Court, and you point this out in your book, is poised to go in a more conservative direction.
It is, and I think it'll take some time for us to really see that. You know, this year is going to be hard to predict because they're still settling into their new roles. But any time a new justice comes on the court, Justice White always said it's like a new justice makes a new court, and it causes them all to rethink their positions and reanalyze some of their old cases. So it's going to be the next few years will really tell us a lot.
Well, and it's very challenging, you know, in a lot of different ways. I mean, we didn't just get one new justice. We got two, which I think really changed things up quite a bit. But also, you know, one of the new happened to become the Chief Justice.
Right. The leader of the court. He's the one who's assigning the decisions. He's shaping how things are going to go. And then, of course, this key pivotal vote with Sam Alito replacing Justice O'Connor. Like we've said, she was a swing vote. So here's President Bush. He's been able to appoint the leader who's going to be there for a very long time. And then, you know, he's replaced Justice O'Connor, that pivotal swing vote, with someone who's much more conservative. So we will see changes right away. There's two big cases this term, abortion and a race case. And I think in both cases, you will really see the court turning to the right in a more conservative way than what you would have seen before President Bush made these nominations.
So I would take
and
it.
Excuse me if you hear sound in the background, because I've just gotten to the airport. I'm flying out to Nebraska to do an interview with the doctor that's involved in that abortion case. So I'm sorry if it's a little noisy.
Well, no, it's exciting. You're making history for us right here on the air here in Northwest Florida.
Airport bus, if you can hear that. Sorry.
That's quite all right. So you probably were not too surprised then when earlier this term the Supreme Court, in my opinion, restored some sanity to the punitive damages situation. That's the Philip Morris case, because it did tend to be, you know, big business described it as a victory. The conservatives certainly were pretty pleased with the decision. We shouldn't have been surprised by it then. Would you agree?
No, I don't think so. Although that was an interesting decision, because the court stopped short of putting any real limits on punitive damages. It just said what juries could and could not consider. And so it scaled back the use of punitive damages, but it didn't jump in and order the courts, you know, below, or the juries below, what to do. And I think that's very revealing about how Roberts sees the role of the judge. He thinks the Supreme Court should kind of take a step back and let legislatures and, you know, the government decide things and not courts.
Okay, we have a call from Steve in Pensacola. Go ahead, Steve, it's your turn.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call. I just I had a quick question, and then I guess I'll just hang up and listen to your response. I was curious to know, presidents in general, who typically has a president's ear when it comes to making appointments to the Supreme Court?
Excellent question, Steve.
Thanks.
That is, and you know, in the book, I look back at all these efforts to change the direction of the court going back before President Reagan, and all the presidents generally rely on their White House counsel, and they also look to the advice of their attorney general, and President Bush was no different. Now, sometimes they've been very wrong, and I think if you look at what happened in the Souter nomination, you know, President H.W. Bush, the dad, was advised that David Souter was this solid judicial conservative, and of course they had no idea what they were talking about. David Souter ended up being one of the most liberal justices on the Supreme Court.
Well, and it's interesting that you should say that, because you've obviously, you have a whole chapter and more actually devoted to deconstructing Myers. And that's interesting that you would say it's the White House counsel that, you know, has the ear of the president when it comes to making that decision.
Sure, because even if we think about the Myers nomination, President Bush wanted to nominate a woman to the Supreme Court to replace Justice O'Connor.
Sure.
And so he went to Harriet Myers and he said, you know, go find one. And so she and her staff looked far and wide, and they kept coming up short. You know, you have to keep in mind a lot of these women judges were getting older. They had been nominated by President Reagan and President H.W. Bush. Then you had 8 years of Clinton judges. So they really had a hard time coming up with candidates. And President Bush and Andy Card got in their heads that maybe Harriet Myers would be a good nominee. And so they asked her deputy, Bill Kelly, to kind of secretly vet her, to look into her background. She had no idea. No one did. Even the Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, was not really read into this. But at the end of the day, a few days before President Bush nominated her, Gonzalez found out about it, and he was just, frankly, horrified. And he went to the White House. He sat down with President Bush. He laid out his concerns. He knew that conservatives would revolt. He did not think she was qualified. And President Bush had already made up his mind, and he nominated her 3 days later.
Wow, unbelievable. Unbelievable, and it's a great chapter.
So in that case, the Myers story, you know, he didn't listen to the advice of his attorney general. And Myers herself resisted initially, and so he really didn't look to his White House counsel there either.
House counsel or his attorney general.
Right.
That's an interesting. And look what happened.
Of course, it was a debacle.
Right. Look what happened. Okay, we need to take a very, very quick break. And when we come back, we'll have about 10 more minutes. So if you've got a question for Ms. Greenberg, we encourage you to call in. We're talking about her new book on the Supreme Court. It's called Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for the Control of the United States Supreme Court. You can read more about it by going to abcmedianet.com. And we're going to talk some more with Ms. Greenberg when we come back from this short break. Please stay tuned.
My great-grandparents came here from Italy, where they owned a hotel and restaurant in Bari on the eastern coast. They taught me about good food and good hospitality, and that's what I invite you to enjoy today. I'm Sergio Recanati of Recanati's Italian Restaurant on Avalon Boulevard in Milton. For generations, our family has found great pleasure in bringing together family and friends with authentic Italian food. Today, my family continues that tradition here. We invite you to come dine today at Recanati's Italian Restaurant on Avalon Boulevard, a mile and a half south of Highway 90. We promise you won't leave hungry.
Did you hear? GulfBreeze News now publishes weekly.
GulfBreeze News is a locally owned newspaper serving residents of GulfBreeze, Midway, and Pensacola Beach.
Are you a sports fan? Read GulfBreeze News to find out more about GulfBreeze high school teams and follow the Little League action from GulfBreeze and Tiger Point Sports Associations.
Do you have children? Find out what's happening in your child's elementary, middle, or high school by reading the GulfBreeze News.
Do you own property or pay taxes in Santa Rosa County? GulfBreeze News can keep you informed about decisions that affect your pocketbook.
Do you own a business? Small businesses love advertising in GulfBreeze News because it affordably reaches the area's most desirable demographics in zip codes 32561 and 32563. It makes good business sense to target customers who are likely to buy your product.
GulfBreeze News readers care about their community, and GulfBreeze News keeps them informed. If it's happening in GulfBreeze, it's in the GulfBreeze News.
Subscribe or advertise today. Call 932-8986.
USBY, I'm always teasing.
Hayes High School proudly presents My Stage Door Canteen.
This heartwarming play is written and directed by Valerie Session and is set back in the days of swing, jive, and World War II.
The mood is set when small-town Dorothy, played by Kelsey Snyder, decides she is finished with her humdrum American life and wants to live the New York lifestyle she's always wanted.
Her overprotective boyfriend, played by Jordan Moore, and the rest of her town hates the idea of her leaving, but there's no changing her mind.
She finally gets to the Stage Door Canteen, and on her journey, she comes across timeless characters such as
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, played by Stephen McFerrin,
Betty Davis, played by Maddie Spisada,
Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, played by Kip Hayes and Robbie Hughes, and many more. Join us at Pace High School's Freedom Hall and see an amazing performance April 26th, 27th, and 28th at 7 p.m. and April 29th at 3 p.m. Tickets in advance are $7 and tickets at the door are $8.
For more information, please contact Pace High Drama at 995-3600, extension 1159.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Okay, you're used to looking at her on your television as she talks and provides legal analysis for all ABC News platforms, but we're pleased to have her on the program Your Turn this afternoon. We're talking with Jan Crawford Greenberg. She's an ABC News legal correspondent based in Washington, D.C., covering the Supreme Court and other national legal issues. And she is the author of a recently released book. It's called Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for Control of the United States Supreme Court. Jan, today there was a column that came out on law.com that talks about Justice Kennedy, how he makes a majority in terms of close cases. And obviously, you mentioned earlier that we still have two very big cases, two pending cases. You're on your way to Nebraska with respect to one of them, and that's the abortion case, and the other is school integration. Where do you think he's going to go? I mean, any predictions which way he's going to swing on either of those cases? And what's interesting is this article points out that in his 19 years on the court, that Kennedy has been criticized for deciding cases without an overarching judicial philosophy. Let me start with that point, and we'll go back to the other one. Is that a fair criticism, do you think? I mean, you're a Supreme Court expert.
From the conservative point of view, Justice Kennedy kind of lacks that judicial philosophy, so it's hard to predict sometimes which way he's going to come down. And unlike Justice O'Connor, who also didn't really have this clear, defined philosophy that we see with Justices Scalia and Thomas and our new two justices, Roberts and Alito, unlike those four, O'Connor didn't have that either. But O'Connor was seen as very decisive. And Justice Kennedy, you know, he's someone who people you know, he kind of wrings his hands and he agonizes over decisions. He changes his position. He infuriates some of the conservative justices like Scalia because he'll flip-flop sometimes in the middle of a case. I mean, after it's already been argued and voted on, there have been times, and I talk about this in the book, on huge cases like abortion and religion, where he changed his mind midstream and walked away from the conservatives. So there is this enormous frustration with Kennedy on the court and off the court. But that said, I think with these two cases this term, Justice Kennedy is likely to stay with the conservatives. The abortion case involved a challenge to a federal law banning partial birth abortion, that specific procedure. Justice Kennedy, in the case 7 years ago, would have allowed state laws that ban that procedure, and I think that he'll stay with that position. He was irate about the case that had struck down all those state laws when Justice O'Connor was on the court. And then in the race case, that is one area where Anthony Kennedy is pretty consistent with conservatives. He is not a fan of affirmative action or minority preferences or set-asides, and he's been very consistent in that area.
Okay, as an expert on the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think I can call you that, particularly after having read your book, Supreme Conflict, you qualify, at least
well,
in my mind,
and
a lot of other folks as well. I mean, you certainly are our current Supreme Court expert when it comes to correspondence that we have here. But I'd like to ask your opinion. One of the things that people have been critical of late, and even more so probably this term, and again, we probably need to, as you mentioned early on, have a little bit of flexibility with the current court since it is the first term for two of the justices. But the number of cases that they are taking seems to be decreasing every year. Is that factually accurate? And
it is.
What do you attribute it to?
Our new Chief Justice has talked about that publicly. It's kind of puzzling to all of them. Now, the court only takes up cases, you know, gets about 10,000 requests every year, and it takes less than 100. But this year is even unusual because they're below their normal 80 or 75 or 80. It's been even below that. And so it was pretty puzzling to all the justices because they didn't think they were doing anything differently. And they've offered a bunch of different reasons for why that might be. One of the most interesting ones that the Chief Justice has talked about is maybe it's technology. You're not seeing perhaps as many conflicts in the lower court, so the Supreme Court doesn't have to step in because so many of these decisions and briefs and memos are available on the computer, and so you're getting more consistency in some of the lower courts. I thought that was pretty interesting, but no one really can quite figure it out. And it could just, like you said, it could just be a little blip, and we'll be back, you know, in the swing of things next year.
They've got a busy time coming up now. They finish their term in June. You know how many decisions they have left to issue?
No, I don't. I just focus, you know, and I have to tell you, out of, you know, all the 70 or 80 cases that they take up each year, we really only focus on 25 or, you know, or so. And then of those, there's only four or five that really, really, you know, are the huge cases. And so the ones that are left, there's a good handful, the abortion and the race. Those are the ones we're all really excited about.
Right, and waiting for those opinions.
Uh-huh.
And we will be guaranteed to get those, is that right, before they close out this current session in June, or can that lag over to the summer?
No, we'll get those by the end of June. And it could come any time, but usually they decide their most controversial ones till the end because it just takes longer for them to write them. There's more dissents. Sometimes there's these separate opinions where other justices want to weigh in with their reasons. So the big controversial ones are always the last week or two of June.
Okay. I don't think I read anywhere that you ever clerked. If you could roll back time, would you go up there and clerk at the Supreme Court? Or
would you?
Oh, you would. Well, I'm sure they'd take you now. There is no age limit. I know that, and not implying that you're old, but I do know that you have four children, and that's remarkable in and of itself.
Yeah, I think that time has passed. But don't you think it would be such an interesting window into how the court works?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, just to be able to sit there, and of course the clerks play a very important role in reviewing those cases, those 10,000 requests, for example, the clerks all review those, and then they make recommendations on which cases the court should take up.
Sometimes they take the first crack at writing a draft of an opinion.
Although none of them will ever, well, many of them will not ever publicly admit to that. I have a good friend who clerked for Clarence Thomas, and he's pretty tight-lipped, and he was pretty upset by that book that came out some time ago. But we're coming to the end of our interview, and I do want to make sure I get back out to the listeners the name of the book. It's written by Jan Crawford Greenberg. The book is called Supreme Conflict, The Inside Story of the Struggle for Control of the United States Supreme Court. It's in bookshelves everywhere. You can also find it on Amazon.com and go to ABC News website. Am I right about that, Jan?
I don't think you can get it on the website, but yeah, it's on Amazon. And thanks so much for taking the time.